Welcome to episode 51 of Forest Focus, brought to you by the USDA Forest Service Pacific Southwest Region. This is the third installment of a mini-series about amphibian conservation and determination. We're calling the mini-series For the Frogs. In each episode, we'll be introduced to one native amphibian that can be found in California's national forests. These creatures are important to ecological health, and they can deepen our connections with our public lands once we get to know them. But each of these species is in a state of decline due to overlapping threats, including pathogens, introduced predators, habitat loss, drought, and wildfire. On their own, each threat is a great difficulty, but as a collective, they're quite the formidable foe for the frogs. Fortunately, there is a village of specialists devoted to conserving these species, despite the colossal challenge of the threat supergroup. The stories of their resolute conservation efforts, pursued through obstacles and setbacks, provides portraits of determination that we can pocket and apply to our own experiences with adversity. In this episode, we're diving into long-term monitoring, a process of investigation that tracks changes in frog populations. This is a patient exercise that requires many years of attentive observations and consistent documentation of data. Monitoring provides essential data that informs the conservation actions that we've been exploring in previous episodes, including species translocation, habitat restoration, and wetland construction. And it also informs what we'll see in our next episode, species reintroduction. So let's hop to it.
I'm Kathy Brown. I'm a wildlife biologist, and I work for the USDA Forest Service, and I'm a herpetologist. Herpetologist is someone who studies reptiles and amphibians, and I study three species of frogs, the Yosemite toad, the Sierra Nevada yellow-legged frog, and the Sierra Nevada population of the southern mountain yellow-legged frog. Today, we are out in a meadow on the Stanislaus National Forest, and we are conducting mark recapture of Yosemite toads. Our goals are to estimate population abundance. This mark recapture that we're doing here is part of a long-term bioregional monitoring program that we're conducting for the Yosemite toad throughout its range.
This is the Forest Service's Sierra Nevada Amphibian Monitoring Program, which assesses the health of populations of threatened and endangered frog species on national forest lands in the Sierra Nevada mountain range. Tracking population status over time evaluates the effectiveness of forest and rangeland management and informs the conservation of the Yosemite toad.
The Yosemite toad has been relatively little studied, and it's a pretty difficult species to study. The adults can only reliably be found during their short breeding window at snowmelt, and then after they breed, they go into their terrestrial environments. So they're just not easily found. Most of the Yosemite toad locations are backcountry, so you actually have to backpack or hike long distances to find them.
This is why long-term data sets are particularly difficult to gather for this species. But the benefits of doing so are demonstrated by the toad population in the meadow that we are visiting today.
This is a really interesting meadow. From about 2002 until about 2013 or so, this meadow had 10 to 12 males that we would count every year. That's a really small population. And this week, we have counted 60 males. And that's six times what it was for the decade prior to that. And so we'll be able to look at factors that have contributed to this population change, and we may also be able to relate it to climatic factors such as drought, high snowpack years, low snowpack years, to see if we can look at what might be explaining this increase in populations. And it's really encouraging because it suggests that, yeah, maybe we'll be able to recover the Yosemite toad.
Before we venture into the meadow, Kathy gives us a quick character profile of this rare toad.
Yosemite toads belong to the family Bufonidae, which is the true toad family. Toads are short and stocky. They have these little bumps on them, and they have what's called a parotid gland. And these are poison glands that are right on the back of their head, kind of right behind their eyeballs. And I kind of call this group the walkers. They don't hop long distances. They kind of walk, or they do these short little hops. And like most amphibians, the females are larger than the males are. What's unique to the Yosemite toad is that they're sexually dimorphic, and that means the females and the males look different. The females have this beautiful black and tan pattern to them. The males at first glance might look kind of drab olive gray, but when you look at it in more detail, they have these really cool little red squiggly lines on them. And the Yosemite toad has two basic calls. They have a trill, which sounds a little bit like a bird call. And that's their mating call. They're basically calling the females to come into the breeding sites. And then the males have another call, which is a release call. During breeding, the males will be fighting with each other. They'll be jumping on each other. And they do this chuck noise that is their release call. And they're basically saying, let me go, let me go.
Now that we've met the Yosemite toads through Kathy's descriptions and their calls, it's time to get closer to this breeding behavior, which takes place in very shallow water. The toad finds the shallow water in habitats that range from ponds, typically less than a foot deep, to flooded vegetation, imagine a flooded lawn, with water that is less than a few inches deep. And both types are found in the meadow we're visiting today. In this shallow water, the toads consistently lay their eggs in water that is about 2 inches deep, which can get almost bathwater warm, even at snowmelt. That warmth promotes fast development of the Yosemite toad from egg to tadpole to small toads. And that fast development is key because this shallow water is ephemeral, meaning it dries out during the summer. As Kathy makes clear, the toad's survival is a delicate balance between temperature and water availability.
They emerge at snowmelt, and then they complete their breeding within a couple weeks. And they lay their eggs in super shallow water, which is about 5 centimeters deep. And the reason they lay their eggs there is because it's warm, and that promotes fast development, which is important in these ephemeral water breeding habitats. It's a very risky breeding strategy. They're breeding at snowmelt. These eggs in the shallow water can freeze overnight. And they also lay it up in the edges of the water, and you can see egg masses just kind of drying out. It's very common for these egg masses to die. The eggs take about 5 to 7 days to hatch and grow into tadpoles. The tadpoles then take about 6 to 8 weeks to transform into small toadlets, which we call metamorphs. And then it takes about 3 years for them to grow into reproductive adults for the males and maybe about 4 years for females.
Time to put on waders so we can get our feet wet in this investigation that is supporting the conservation of this special species. And the next generation of toad conservationists, Kathy's field crew, are ready to help us take the leap into a dynamic meadow environment.
My name is Steve Blaine, and I'm a field tech for Kathy Brown and the Amphibian Monitoring Project. It's my second season. We're doing capture mark recapture with Yosemite toads. So we're searching for adults and scanning them for pit tags, which marks them as individuals so we can see if we've caught them in the past. And if we haven't, we mark them this year. So in the future, if we catch them again, we'll know it's the same individual.
If you missed episode 1 of For the Frogs, pit tags are tiny tubular microchips that go under a frog's skin. Each has a unique identification number, and because they require no batteries, they become lifelong barcodes for an animal, acting like a fingerprint when the tag is scanned with a chip reader. During annual surveys like this one, the wildlife specialists scan each frog when they collect it. Through tracking animals recognized by the unique ID number, specialists gain a wealth of information for wildlife conservation. For long-term monitoring like this program, data can be analyzed with a statistical model to estimate abundance of populations and other demographic characteristics, including survival rates, the number of adults that stay alive from year to year, and recruitment rates, the number of new adults that get added to a population each year. And they can also see how these characteristics change from year to year.
Toads really like to hide as best they can, and the young toads are very tiny. So we have to be very careful where we step and pay very close attention to anything that moves or has the pattern or shape of a toad to avoid stepping on the species that we're studying.
I'm Amelia LaRock, and I'm a biological science technician for the U.S. Forest Service. I think a lot of people wouldn't want to live where they work, but where I am right now is just absolutely beautiful, and it's so nice to be able to wake up and go to sleep in this awesome place.
Amy Hassler, The last member of this season's wildlife crew feels much the same.
This job has been kind of a dream job. So you get to be outside, you get to see the toads and interact with them, and you get to backpack. Couldn't really ask for anything better than that.
Kathy and her crew take us now to a nearby special part of this meadow.
This is what we call the bachelor pad. As this population started growing and expanding, the crews found a lot of single males down here. The females come in, they lay their eggs, and then they're pretty much off to their terrestrial habitats. Let's go over and look at the little implex parent. You can see the male in yellow, he's on top of the female. This is called implexus, the mating behavior. The males can turn really bright yellow when they're in implexus. They'll be olive green, and then they'll turn bright yellow once they grab onto the female.
To our human eye, this looks like the smaller male is hugging the back of a larger female. But their peaceful embrace is about to be disrupted.
Let's see, watch this male. He's coming. He's going to dive bomb that pair. And here comes another one and another one. Those males are trying to dislodge the male that's in implexus. Here we go. See that back kick?
As Kathy described, the other males are attempting to get the male that is currently on the back of the female off. But that male is not having it. He gives the others a swift kick with his hind foot, which sends them somersaulting. This doesn't seem to daunt those males, though. Soon after, they are back calling to attract females. It is all extremely entertaining to witness. But we step away from the calling and these antics so Kathy can tell us a bit more about what over 20 years of monitoring this species has been revealing.
We've been monitoring the Yosemite toad since 2002, and we monitor it because it is listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act, so its populations have declined in both distribution and abundance. That means there's fewer populations on the landscape, and the numbers of animals in each population are small. We don't totally know what has caused the Yosemite toad's decline. It's likely that anything that causes those habitats to dry out sooner would affect the species.
As we discussed earlier, Yosemite toads use shallow water right at snowmelt to breed. That very shallow water is warm, which helps them develop through their life stages quickly. But they also need that shallow water to last long enough for eggs to hatch into tadpoles and for tadpoles to develop into their frog form. The temperature and water availability they need for this development are influenced by many factors outside of their control, like precipitation and heat waves. But despite their risky breeding strategy and the threats they face, these toads have a remarkable resilience. They have adapted to the variability and uncertainty of these high elevation environments.
Yosemite toads are both resilient and vulnerable. They've lived in these environments for thousands of years, so they're definitely adapted to it. The adults are relatively long-lived, and we've documented adults up to at least 15 years, and some may live longer. And so that means that successful reproduction does not have to occur every year. It just needs to happen enough times for the population to persist over time. But they're also really vulnerable because they breed in this really shallow, ephemeral water that dries up over the summer. And if the water dries before the tadpoles can develop into metamorphs, they die. They desiccate and dry out. So any small changes that reduce the hydro period, the length of water that remains in those breeding areas, can actually have a big effect on the breeding success of the species.
The quantitative data gathered through this long-term monitoring has supported these insights into the resilience and vulnerability of the Yosemite toad. In addition to tracking population abundance and demography, we now know more about where and when they breed, how long they live, and how long breeding sites need to retain water for successful recruitment. Long-term monitoring has also provided opportunities to detect ecological surprises. The population in this meadow was monitored before, during, and after a historic drought. All this information can inform the evidence-based conservation of this threatened species. Before we get out of the waders and begin our hike back home, we might be wondering how these years of investigation focusing on this one threatened species fits into the bigger picture of conservation. Or perhaps more simply, why do specialists devote decades to this work? In short, it's personal and ecological.
Yosemite toads are just adorable. They're super fun to watch. They've got lots of personality, and I just think the world is a much better place to have them. The more we learn about the species that inhabit ecosystems, the more we're going to know about how to conserve them. And a commonly used metaphor is like a car or a plane, where it's got lots of parts to it. If you just start losing parts, you never know which one is going to make the whole system collapse. And so if we want to conserve our ecosystems, it's in our interest to actually conserve and retain all the different parts, and that includes the Yosemite toad.
And for some frog philosophy to take home, let's consider this. As Kathy highlighted, this species is both vulnerable and resilient. It has adapted to a risky environment, breeding right at snowmelt in shallow water that is always on the way to evaporating, and that says nothing about the ongoing possibility of uncharacteristically low precipitation mixing with unusually high or cold temperatures in our presently changing climate. And yet, in this meadow, we see an increase in a population, despite all those factors and uncertainty. Even within their vulnerabilities, they are demonstrating their resilience to make a comeback. So when we feel at risk to the impacts of undesired changes in our human world, maybe we can bring to mind the swift backkick and spirited call of the Yosemite toad as an invitation to turn our gaze to see not just our vulnerability, but also our ability to adapt and develop resilience over time to whatever adversity we are facing. Thanks for listening. For those who are curious to learn more, go over to the show description page and click on the links. To find more episodes, search for Forest Focus Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, enjoy your public lands. Please remember to recreate responsibly, know before you go, and learn what you can do to prevent wildfires. Take care. This podcast is sponsored by the USDA Department of Agriculture Forest Service, and the USDA is an equal opportunity provider, employer, and lender.